Like, you can look at one player and say that, okay, this guy is like standing out.
Sorry about that, Jets. Calm down.
That was a special appearance from Octavia, Nipun's dog. Welcome, Octavia, to the podcast. I'm talking to Nipun about Manchester United and his expectations from them on this upcoming season. We also managed to bring in Cricket World Cup and Women's World Cup into the chat. I hope you guys enjoy listening. Have fun. Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, hear you. That's all.
Finally.
Finally, dude.
The Rock has come back to WrestleMania.
Finally, The Rock has come back to two substitutes.
Exactly. I can smell what you're cooking.
You can smell what I've been cooking. It's not anything anyone should be smelling.
Is it biology related stuff?
Yes, it's nothing, it's very toxic, let's just say that.
How have you been?
I'm good, bro, how you been?
Good, just chugging along.
Yeah, man. Life is good, work is good.
Life is good, work is good, yes.
Excellent.
Alright.
Alright, man, let's do this.
Yeah, so I think I didn't talk to you since the season ended, so I wanted to get your opinion on... Most of this podcast would be about Manchester United, so like, what did you think of your season?
Sounds good.
That's a good start.
Yeah.
Little smirk. Okay.
Yeah, it's more than a smirk, man. It's just been a rough season as a Manchester United supporter.
So, it started off well during that honeymoon period when Ole was appointed, when Ole was at the wheel, as people were saying. And then I want you to talk about what happened.
Yeah, so I think the last time I joined you and Akshay, I mentioned that, you know, I think this is going to end in tears, you know, because I see them, I see some structural problems, and I see that the initial boost of getting rid of Mourinho will eventually fade away, and all the same problems will reappear. And that's essentially what happened. There was, as you said, the honeymoon period. We went like 10, 12 games unbeaten. You know, we beat Spurs away from home. We had some really good results. We beat PSG in that comeback. And then, to be honest, the wheels fell off. And the same issues, defensive errors, no solidity in midfield, injuries, lack of form of the strikers. All of those issues manifested. And then a slightly newer issue of some unexpected errors from David De Gea also manifested. So it changed pretty quickly, and we found ourselves struggling.
Yeah, usually you can rely on David De Gea, but it's not his fault. Obviously, every player goes through a bad patch, but for David De Gea, it came at a time when the other team players were also not playing well, so there was nothing good, I guess, that was happening. Look at one player and say that, okay, this guy is standing out.
Sorry about that, that's not Octavia, calm down.
What's his name?
Calm down, that's Octavia.
Hello, sorry, Octavia. So, welcome to the podcast. Would you like to share your opinion?
She doesn't approve of me doing a podcast.
Maybe she has different opinions on Manchester United season.
She's very pro Mourinho. So, so what I was getting at was essentially, you're right. You cannot blame David De Gea, especially after everything he's. After single-handedly supporting United for 3 years. It's just, you know, people are like, there's some Man United supporters who've like turned against him because he hasn't signed a contract and his form dipped, but I'm not one of those. I still think he's the best goalkeeper in the world. So
yeah, okay, so And what, so I'll ask this again. People have been saying things about Pogba also. So he usually comes up in every conversation about Manchester United. So what about his interview that he did recently with, I don't know with what journalist, but one of the people there.
It was a random, it wasn't a like an actual big journalist. It was some random blogger in Japan. It was the most unexpected place to get transfer news. You know, he was just in Japan. I don't know if he was on vacation or something, but some random dude found him on the street or something and asked him this question. He's like, "Yeah, I think it's time for me to move on."
Some random dude who had a mic and
And a
a
camera.
video camera with him.
He was the full-time Devils. He was the Arsenal fan TV of Japan, basically.
Yeah, but so do you? I know you supported Pogba through some of the time, and he. It was like his support was not out of the
It
ordinary.
wasn't.
Also, like it was, he was still a good player for Manchester United. But do you think after these opinions that he's made or points that he made that he might be in the wrong side also during all this Mourinho thing that was happening when
I mean,
Mourinho?
it's never just one person at fault,
Yeah.
right? That's just a fact. But at the same time, I mean, I completely stand by my opinion of the way Mourinho dealt with
That's.
him was completely in. And the thing is that there's precedent for the way Mourinho dealt with Pogba, because he did that with he's done that with so many other players,
Right,
right? You can think
yeah.
of Casillas, you can think of the way he dealt with what's the guy?
Even
I forgot
Ronaldo,
the.
I think he had some problems.
Yeah, Ronaldo, Sergio Ramos,
Yeah.
all the players at Real Madrid. With Chelsea, he fell out famously with Fabregas and
Yeah.
Costa and all this. So there's precedent for Mourinho when anyone challenges him,
Right.
because he's a tiny man with a Napoleon complex, he gets very insecure and he tries to push that person out of the club. And almost always now,
Yeah.
especially with the way that player power is, he's the one that ends up getting pushed out.
Right.
So that's just normal. But yeah, I mean, I think Pogba, I said this before the start of this, before this, really towards the end of the season, I was like, yeah, Pogba's going to leave. He's going to leave this summer.
Yeah.
He's, I mean, if I was Pogba, even as a Manchester United supporter, like, obviously, this is not a club that's has an upward trajectory right now.
Right.
And second of all, I mean, the guy gets, I don't know if you saw that video of that little crappy Manchester United supporter yelling at him, calling him a virus and stuff like that
Oh,
before.
I didn't see. Okay, I didn't see that.
Yeah, right
Yeah.
at the last home game, there's like this viral video of this man just yelling at Pogba, and Pogba like basically being the bigger man and like putting his hand over his heart and
Oh
doing it.
yeah. In the stadium, right? Yeah, I did
Yeah,
see that. Yeah.
at Old Trafford, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, from Pogba's perspective, what is the reason for him to stay at Man United?
Yeah.
Really? Genuinely, what is the reason for Paul Pogba to stay at Man United? And other than the fact that I love this club and for me, it's the best club in the world or whatever,
Yeah.
but that's my reason. What is Paul Pogba's reason? And I can't think of one.
Yeah, he never quite settled and never was made to settle, I guess, in Man U
Yeah.
because of all the conditions.
No, I agree. I mean, his biggest flaw was that he came into a team that was rebuilding,
Yeah.
and the person rebuilding it was someone who was a cancer to football and
Yeah.
cancer to Man United. So that was his biggest fault. Well, I can't even say it's a fault. It's just circumstance, right?
Yeah, I think when he might not have been, Mourinho might not have been appointed when he did, if there were other maybe good options, but I don't know if there were other options available at the time. But would you consider Ed Woodward as also a culprit in all of this? Like,
Oh my
because of
goodness, of course. I mean,
the
Ed Woodward is a big culprit in a lot of things. I think the big error they made was when Guardiola became available. Louis van Gaal was the manager, and Van Gaal was struggling at the time, and that was the time they should have really moved for Guardiola. Now, look, I don't know if Guardiola would have signed for United. I don't know that.
Yeah.
But it's now well established that United didn't make a move for him. So that is the big flaw. Right. You look at, it just felt like United was heading towards Mourinho, and that in itself shows very short-termism from my perspective. Of course, you know my thoughts on Mourinho, so I don't have to keep going on and on.
Yeah.
But the fact is that it's well known universally that Mourinho is a 2.5-year cycle.
Right.
So it's just...
Wait, are you still online? This call ended. Yep, we got disconnected for some reason.
Sorry about that. Hang on a sec.
Where were we?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, sorry about that. My, it just dropped on my end.
Oh, okay, no problem.
We've had some internet connectivity issues. So what I was saying was... what was I saying?
Mourinho something.
Yeah, obviously.
Short-termism.
Yeah, so it's a well-known fact that with Mourinho, you're dealing with a short-term issue, right? 2.5 years, 3 years at the max before the wheels fall off. And it showed that it's just not a thing that works at a club like United.
Right.
And it's, you know, that's why I'm willing to give Solskjaer more time. But I really think that there are some systemic issues that need to be dealt with. And of course, Woodward is one of them.
And that's the main point, actually. So I think most managers these days are they sign for 3 years, maybe, or 4 years. But the other thing that you said before, the wheels fall off, that's the main problem. Because usually, even if you get a good manager, even if he stays for 3 years, he will leave the club in a good note so the other manager can build on it. But Mourinho, these days especially, is not leaving the club on good terms.
And he's leaving a very aged squad.
Yeah.
A squad that is going to, you know, you're going to have to rebuild. Like, look at the signings he made when he first joined, right?
Right.
He signed Pogba, which is great. He signed Eric Bailly. But he signed Mkhitaryan and Ibrahimovic. Ibrahimovic was 34 plus at the time. So Mourinho knew that he's going to have to replace a striker. So his next season, he had to sign Lukaku.
Right? Yeah.
Same with Mkhitaryan. He was 28 when he signed for United. You knew that that's a two-year project at the most. Turned out it was a year and change with the swap for another player who is also, you know, at the time 29, which is Alexis Sanchez. Right. So Mourinho's short-termism definitely hurts the clubs. And, I mean, as a Chelsea supporter, you know this very well. So you know, United made a big... I say this every time with Mourinho, and I said this when United signed Mourinho, United made a big, big, big error making Jose Mourinho the manager of the club.
Right. Yeah, hopefully his time off from the game will give him new perspective.
Yeah, right. He was at the Women's World Cup quarterfinal yesterday, USA versus
France.
France.
Yeah.
And I saw a photo of him, and I was like, you know, I felt watching the game that there was the presence of a Dementor somewhere in the stadium. And now I know where that came from. It was exactly where Jose Mourinho was sitting. So
somebody should have. No one knew the Expecto Patronum, the charm. Oh yeah, there's a connectivity problem. I think we dropped for a moment.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, I was saying no one knew the Patronus charm to.
Yeah, that's right. No one knew the Patronus charm there. Otherwise, Expecto Patronum would have whipped through the entire stadium, and Mourinho would have gone flying out of
taking the form of Ferguson or something.
That would be amazing if the Patronus was the form of Sir Alex or Sir Matt Busby. That would be the most poetic thing ever.
Okay, so for the new season, what are your expectations? I know you guys signed 2 new players so far, and Van Bissaka is a really good signing that they completed today, I think, or yesterday.
Today, this morning, it was announced. But look, I mean, if you had told me that the areas that we need to focus on, fullback is, I mean, to be fair, everything is a priority.
All positions.
Fullback, you know, we have Luke Shaw, we have Dalot. Ashley Young, God help us. We obviously have Diogo Dalot. We have Darmian, who will move on. So honestly, it was it's an area that wasn't a high priority. I think the reason we signed Wan-Bissaka is because it probably became clear to United that he was moving this summer.
Right.
That
I was going to say that.
If they didn't move for him, he would be gone to Chelsea or City
some other. Yeah. Like, and he's young, so it's better to get him in the team now.
Yeah, and that's definitely very true.
You also signed Daniel James. Have you got any information on him? How's he? I did not hear of him before he was attached to Manchester United.
Look, what you don't know about him is that he's the greatest player to ever.
Okay.
Look, I won't even, like, there are a lot of supporters who suddenly think that, pretend that they've watched a lot of Daniel James. I haven't watched a lot of Daniel James. Honestly, I'd barely heard of him.
Yeah.
That's mostly because, but that's not because he's a bad player or anything. I haven't watched enough of Swansea to have an informed opinion.
Right.
But, you know, he's fast. And I guess that's something that people care about a lot is
in FIFA.
In FIFA, he's very fast. you know, the thing is that I find that very interesting because unless Ole Gunnar Solskjaer thinks that he can tactically change the game again, which is bringing back traditional wingers, left-footed wingers who are fast, who cut outside. I don't see how impactful Daniel James is going to be because the way football is right now with inverted wingers, unless you have a striker like Ruud van Nistelrooy, if you have a traditional winger, you're probably not going to get a lot of assists out of it because defenders know how to defend against regular flat crosses, right?
Yeah.
It's the reason why someone like Antonio Valencia basically struggled as a winger in the last 2 years before he became a fullback, because a traditional right winger crossing with the right foot, who cannot play with his left foot, who cannot cut inside, it's the game has kind of moved past that. So I watched Daniel James and I wonder if he'll have a lot of, if he'll be successful.
Right.
But the other way of looking at it, if he is successful, it might herald the return of the traditional winger. So who knows?
But yeah, so looking at last season, also most of, like, I think two of the most wing players that got the most assist, I think, were from Liverpool, but they were full backs, Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold. But maybe either that could be the new style of play that is going on in modern football, or just Liverpool's personal.
But then you look at, but the reason they had that those many assists is because the likes of Salah, the likes of Firmino, the likes of Mane were dragging the play inwards,
right?
So if you that created the space for the fullbacks to get further up and cross the ball.
Yeah.
But at United, we don't have that right now.
Right.
Anthony Martial is struggling. He's not really doing that well on the right side. We have Juan Mata, who, to be fair, does float inside very comfortably onto his left foot. But neither of them are going to. Well, Martial maybe, but Mata's not going to be able to create enough space on the counter to allow Wan-Bissaka to bomb forward the way that Robertson does at Liverpool. So it's and by the way, the key there is that Daniel James is not going to be playing at fullback, right? He's going to be playing as a winger. So
So what do you? Do you expect any more signing? I mean, you should expect, but will you get any more signings in the summer?
I mean, we have to. We absolutely have to sign a centre back.
Yeah.
If Pogba leaves, we have to sign a midfielder. If Lukaku leaves, we have to sign a striker. So I think I think at this moment, as a team, is our top priorities is center back, and okay. then if Pogba and Lukaku leave, then we need to fill those positions.
Any rumors that any news that you have on some potential?
I mean, we've been linked with Koulibaly and Maguire. Oh. I think those are the two center backs that we get linked with the most often.
Yeah, Koulibaly is a strange one. He has been linked with lot of clubs in previous transfer markets also, but somehow he always ends up in staying at Napoli.
I think his agent is a genius, right?
Yeah.
I think Koulibaly
Raiola?
Is it Raiola?
I don't know. Usually whenever I hear agents, that's the first name.
You think of Mino Raiola. that's a pretty good shout. I'm actually going to try to look up who his agent is, because I really don't remember. But I don't think it's Mino Raiola.
No. He says he's close to appointing a new agent. Okay.
Then it is Mino Raiola.
What? Really? Wait, let me see.
I'm guessing it would be Raiola if he's trying to sign a new agent and all these transfer rumors are coming up. So.
Yeah, Koulibaly would be amazing signing if he does join.
Then the question about Eric Bailly comes up as well, you know, like fantastic defender when he's fit, but he's not fit a lot, and as well as I don't think his decision making has come along far enough, so
right.
Yeah.
So what are your predictions for Manchester United? Top 4, top 6?
Top 6.
Relegation?
Top 6. Top 6. At this moment, I would say top 6 and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer really struggles at the start of the season, and then it gets a little bit better again around Christmas, and then tails off again at the end of the year. So,
but
we'll end up top 6.
Okay. But you expect Ole to be at Manchester United at least for this season? Or
possibly.
Okay.
Possibly.
You gave him more of a chance than you gave Mourinho when we, you remember when we talked. Good.
I mean, I still think that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will get fired or, you know, part ways.
Right.
Mutually, whatever the hell that means. But I think it'll depend on some extenuating factors. What I mean by that is who else is available to sign as manager at that moment. So
okay.
I think that's what will determine when he gets fired. But I think because of the fact that I don't see Guardiola leaving for another year, I don't see Ancelotti, I don't see any of the great managers being available
right.
for a while. I just see Solskjaer, because of that, I think Solskjaer will get a stay of execution.
Right. Yeah, there were rumors about Pochettino also, but it looks like he's staying at Spurs now. So.
Yeah. I mean, Foch, you know, you can't. I think people like have this thing about mocking Tottenham, right?
Yeah.
Like so Spursy, so Spursy, but you forget the fact that this guy made virtually no signings
right for
the
2 years
of last season.
Yeah,
and got to the Champions League final. And conclusively got to the Champions League final. Like United, we shouldn't have got past PSG, to be honest.
Yeah,
that was complete fluke, right? So if we had got past Barcelona by fluke again, it wouldn't have meant that we were a really good team. It is that we were a lucky team.
Right.
But Spurs conclusively deserve to be in the final, and
yeah.
You know, it's a huge credit to Pochettino.
And not being able to play in their own home stadium also for a year or so, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Same job. What else? Okay, yeah, any... So, what overall Europe, on European news, who do you think had the... So, Real Madrid... So, yeah, I was going to ask, who had the best transfer market so far, I think, or who do you expect to come back stronger next year? Real Madrid is one of them. Juventus.
Yeah, I mean, you can't look past Madrid,
yeah.
right? With the signings they made, with Eden Hazard going there, with the players they already have there. I mean, Eden Hazard really is a delayed replacement for Cristiano.
Right.
To be honest. And he's just he's such a good player. I mean, I don't need to talk about Hazard. You should be the one to talk about Hazard. But yeah, Real Madrid has been good. They're obviously probably going to try to sign Pogba as well. So they are the ones that I'm looking at in terms of massive improvement. Juventus, if they sign De Ligt, which they will, that's another huge signing they've made for their ultimate goal of winning the Champions League, which just seems to elude them somehow. But I'll be honest with you, Aaron, I've kind of not paid as much attention as I usually do in the summer with transfer stuff.
Yeah.
First of all, because watching the Manchester United shit show is annoying. But beyond that, I've just been focused on the Women's World Cup and Gold Cup and domestic American soccer. There's just so much soccer going on this summer.
I was going to say women's. So I've been watching bits and pieces of Women's World Cup. I'm not following that as much, but I did see yesterday's game. I was expecting France to win actually before the match started, because they had beaten US earlier on in the year, I think, and they were playing at home, of course. But and US's last game against Spain was hard match. So.
I mean, all those were good reasons. I did a radio thing in Omaha yesterday morning, a radio interview, and my prediction was that France would win 2-1. So right. You and I are on the same page. Some fantastic players on that French team. Amandine Henry, who plays for Lyon, is... Oh my goodness, what a...
Goal she scored, not in this game, but the... I don't know the other team, but... was a really good goal early on World Cup.
Sure. I think it was the Brazil game, right?
Yeah. You're talking about.
She's fantastic. They have the best defender in the world in Renard. They have one of the best fullbacks in the world with Marjorie. Gauvin, their striker, is fantastic. So France, the thing, by the way, the U.S. women's national team deserved to win the game, so huge credit to them.
Yeah.
But what I want to say about the French women's team is that 10 years ago, there was no French football. None of these women were pros. None of them were playing pro. Okay. It's only since 2011 that the French national team has, women's national team has kind of taken a stronghold within the game. And now they are the second best team in the world. And, you know, it's a huge lesson for the Football Federation of the World, which is that if you invest in women's football
and be patient,
your team can be really, really good.
Yeah.
And the French national team is a great example of that. Obviously the U.S. women's national team is way ahead of the curve in development, right?
Right.
So it's just fantastic team, the French national team. I really wish the two teams had met in the final, but just how the draw played out.
I also think with women's football, they have not been corrupted like that.
Yet.
In some way, like men's football.
You're right. I think a lot of people say that. I think a lot of people say correctly that women's football is more pure than men's football right now. There's less diving.
Yeah,
there are no issues of corruption yet at the federation level.
Yeah.
You're seeing like a style of football that is more purist. Like you have tackles, you have crossing, and you know you don't. When you see men's football, men's soccer now, there's way less traditional, some of those traditional vibes of crossing and heading the ball. All of that is gone away to flashy dribbling and stuff like that. So I totally agree. I think that there's a lot of validity to what you said.
Like they get tackled, they get back up, there's no crying around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No diving around, no crying about tackles for 30 minutes. Yeah.
Have you been watching? Okay. This is not football related, but Cricket World Cup, of course.
Of course, I've been watching the Cricket World Cup, dude. What kind of Indian do you think I am? Exactly. I've watched every game, dude. I'm going to wake up tomorrow at 5:30 a.m. to watch the England game.
I'm getting nervous with every game, actually, because we are looking so good, but I hope we don't lose in the final when it actually met our semifinals.
Yeah, that's my concern.
Yeah.
I think my concern is that we're peaking very early, right? That's my concern. But like you look at the depth of the Indian team, right?
Yeah.
You look at the fact that we lost Bhuvneshwar Kumar,
and
one of the best bowlers in the world. I would say top five bowler in the world, right?
Right.
And you have Mohammad Shami come in.
Taking a hat-trick.
And he has been incredible. He had a hat-trick in the World Cup, which is, you know, very rare. I think he's the second Indian to have a hat-trick in the World Cup.
Yeah.
To Chetan Sharma. And he in the game, was it yesterday or Thursday? Against West Indies. He was fantastic. I think he had seven overs for like 15 runs. I might be wrong about that, but just a ridiculously accurate bowler. And then on the other side, you have Jasprit Bumrah, who is by far the best bowler in the world.
Unconventional. Yeah.
Just difficult to play, best strike bowler. Then you have two of the best spinners. And then you have a backup spinner who's not even playing. We lost Shikhar Dhawan to injury.
Yeah.
We brought in Rishabh Pant, who hasn't played, who's
KL Rahul.
Rahul has played decently well. We have two of the best batsmen in the world, with obviously Virat Kohli, the best batsman in the world, and Rohit Sharma. So, and then you have players like Pandya and Dhoni, who on their day can absolutely destroy a bowling lineup. We have so much depth on this team that let's just say this. I don't know how you feel, Varun, but I remember the days where I used to watch cricket
because of Sachin.
And as soon as Tendulkar got out, I would be like, okay, game.
Yep. Right. I used to cry when he got out. Gave up hope and then sleep. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. Tendulkar got out. You knew that no one else was going to do anything.
Yeah.
You knew the bowling was horrible. And then, you know, it started to change with the sort of Ganguly era, right? Because we got Dravid, we got Ganguly, we got Yuvraj Singh, got Jadeja before his deal. And then we started seeing the likes of Kumbhle and stuff. But yeah, it's a totally different Indian team now than it was when we were growing up.
Yeah, more of a team than before.
Exactly.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Exactly.
Third World Cup.
Now, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Virat Kohli is better than Sachin Tendulkar?
I'll confirm this when he retires, but right now, yes. Some days I feel like he is a better cricketer, maybe not a batsman, but better cricketer overall, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's beyond a doubt.
Yeah. Right?
I think that is beyond a doubt. He's a better thinker of the game. He's obviously, you know, Tendulkar sucked as a captain, to be honest.
Yeah.
But
if he had players like Virat Kohli has, maybe like the group that Kohli has right now, maybe he would have been different for Sachin. It's really hard to compare. Sachin is my favorite batsman. Virat Kohli will never be in that level, but I think Virat Kohli might edge him when he retires. What is your opinion?
I think you're right. I mean, you're on the money. Tendulkar is my favorite batsman of all time as well, along with Jacques Kallis of South Africa.
Okay,
but I think Virat is going to go down as... Well, he's definitely going to have more runs at the end of his career than Tendulkar did. That's beyond a doubt at this point, right?
Yeah.
When you look at his average, his trajectory of getting to 10,000, 20,000, right? It's insane.
Yeah.
But of course, barring injuries, of course,
right,
which he takes very good care of himself. But I think in terms of a natural batsman, I think Tendulkar always felt like more of a natural batsman, whereas Virat feels more like an intelligent batsman. I think Jacques Kallis is a great comparison.
Right.
I never thought, when you look at Jacques Kallis' bat, you never thought that this guy is going to be a very intricate batsman. He just looked like a big old powerhouse, right?
Yeah.
But when you watched him play, he was just very smart and knew how to manipulate the bowling very well.
Right. And I think he slowly creeped up, his rise creeped up on me. I didn't, like, at the start of his career, I didn't see him I never saw him around Tendulkar in the same level, but during his ending days as a cricketer, I started to realize that he was one of the best all-rounders of that time.
Oh yeah, I mean, absolutely. You're talking about Kallis, right?
Yeah, Kallis. Yeah,
Kallis was, if you so his bowling was decent, but like, my goodness, his batting was so consistent. I'd say the most consistent batsman I ever watched was Ricky Ponting. And the second most consistent batsman I watched was Jacques Kallis.
Hmm.
Just in terms of, you know, just every game, like 40 plus, 40 plus, 45 plus, turning 50s into 100s.
Yeah.
It was just very methodical and calculated. Like most people, I think, forget, at least I do most of the time, that Ricky Ponting is a better batsman than Steve Waugh was. You know,
yeah,
like
in, I agree. Steve, yeah.
Steve Waugh, Gilchrist, Mark Waugh, those guys get a lot of credit. But truth be told, Ricky Ponting was an elite batsman, and at during his peak, he was right up there with Sachin in terms of efficacy of his batting.
Sometimes a jerk, also. That's why I'll never put him in the same level as. But maybe you need that.
I mean, you look at Virat, right?
Exactly.
I think he's calming down a little bit. There's definitely some of that arrogance in him, which I love, right?
Yeah.
I love that. As long as someone on your team, you love it. So.
Yeah. I think that's also because he had a chat. He had multiple chats with Sachin about life, about behavior and stuff. That's what I was reading from Harsha Bhugle, one of his videos.
Oh, okay.
So
I didn't know that. Truth be told, I'm a fair weather cricket fan, so I'm watching the cricket. I'm watching the World Cup obsessively right now. Like I watch almost even when I'm at work, I have the games on my phone, and I'll be listening to them and stuff. So. I'm watching every India game, and I'm sort of watching every game, at least the highlights of every game. So I'm super into the World Cup right now.
Nice.
But as soon as the World Cup is over,
yep.
It goes back to just following the game on cricinfo.com, like seeing the score lines and stuff.
Oh, so. I don't even do that. I back to football. I think football has taken over as my favorite sport now. Since Sachin retired, I have lost my interest in cricket. Yeah,
That's fair. That's how I feel about soccer now, though. Now that Fellaini's not at United, I don't feel any passion for the game at all.
Yeah, man, I think you should move to cricket podcasting.
That's why I'm a Shandong FC fan.
Nice.
Wherever Fellaini plays now.
They should move to Europe now and be a part of Champions League, so Fellaini can assert his dominance.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah. All right, I think that was
it. All right, man.
Thanks for joining. And
pleasure always chatting with you.
People can follow you on SockTakes, right?
That's it. That's SockTakes.com is our website where we cover American soccer primarily.
I don't know why when I first saw that Twitter name, I never understood sock means soccer. Because usually I call it football. I thought you were actually saying socks, like shoe. But then I couldn't relate why that was.
To be fair, I didn't come up with the name. It was the guy who basically is the benefactor of the website.
Okay.
And I'm not one for branding and stuff, so I was just like, sure, whatever you want to call it. I don't care.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, though.
All right, man. Great chatting with you, Varun. Talk soon, yeah?
Same. Have a good rest of the weekend.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.